So far, we have come across 4 out of 5 of the ways to invalidate a shechita, a slaughtering. Although the official names for these invalidations have not been mentioned in the Mishnah, rather they've only been described in the Mishnah, it is nevertheless very good to be familiar with the official terms. The first invalidation is called ikur, that is when you cut the koneh, the windpipe, or the veshet, the food pipe. Cutting through these windpipe, the windpipe and the food pipe, that is the slaughtering. And the first validation is ikur, that's when you cut through the pipes with a knife which has jagged edges. It's not smooth. The second invalidation is called hagroma, and that is when you cut the windpipe or the food pipe in the wrong location. Or perhaps you don't cut the pipes at all, you cut a different part of the body. The third invalidation is called dorsa, that's when you slice, you chop the windpipe or food pipe, instead of cutting it with a motion, by moving the knife horizontally as well as downwards while you're cutting it. The fourth invalidation is called shehia, which is when there is a break in the middle. He pauses in the middle of the slaughtering for the amount of time that it takes to slaughter an animal. Those are the 4 invalidations which have been discussed so far. The 5th invalidation is going to be mentioned in the middle of this Mishnah, and that is called chaloda. Chaloda is when the knife is hidden at the time of the slaughtering, and what that means is that instead of cutting it from the direction where you're standing, and you cut the food pipe and windpipe away from you, but by moving the knife in the direction away from you, chaloda is where you put the knife into the animal's body, and then you put the knife behind the windpipe or the food pipe and cut it towards you. By moving the knife in a direction towards you, such that at the time that you're cutting through the pipe, it is the knife itself is hidden from you. It's on the other side of the pipe, and that would be an invalidation of chaloda. So again, let's summarize the 5 invalidations. The first invalidation is ikur, where a knife with jagged edges is used. The second one is hagroma, where the slaughtering takes place in the wrong location on the animal's neck. The third invalidation is dorsa, where the windpipe or food pipe are chopped instead of being cut with a motion of the knife. The fourth invalidation is shehia, where the person slaughtering pauses in the middle for enough time that it takes to slaughter an animal. And the 5th invalidation is chaloda, where the knife is hidden because he slaughters it from the other side of the pipe. The beginning of this Mishnah actually discusses another example of ikur, shochet aveshet. If he slaughtered the food pipe using a correct, valid knife without any jagged edges, but then ufosek asagargeres, he used a different knife which does have jagged edges to cut through the windpipe. The gargeris is also known as the koneh, this refers to the windpipe, and so part of the slaughtering, he performed it with an invalidation of ikur, oishochet asagargeres, ufosek asagargeres, or he slaughtered the windpipe with a valid knife, but he cut the food pipe with a knife which has jagged edges, even if he didn't pause for enough time in the middle while he was changing the knives, for enough time to perform a slaughtering, nevertheless, although there's no invalidation of shehia pausing, there is a simple invalidation of ikur. Next case, isheshochat echad mehen, or if he slaughtered one of the pipes in a perfectly valid way, vehimtinla shemesa, and then he waited for the animal to die. Once the animal is dead, then even if he cuts through the other pipe, that's irrelevant because the animal's already dead. So he began the procedure of slaughtering, and the first pipe was slaughtered in the absolutely correct way, just like in the first 2 cases. But the second half of the slaughtering was not performed correctly in a valid way. Or if he hid the knife behind the second pipe. So the first pipe he cut in a correct way. When it came to the second one, there was an invalidation of chaloda, where he cut it from the other side of the pipe, or fosokai. And then he cut it from the other side, Rabbi Yeshevov Omer. Rabbi Yeshevov says, in all of these cases, nevela, the animal has the status of a nevela. A nevela is an animal which dies without a correct slaughtering. And as well as it being forbidden to eat that animal, it is also a source of tumah. If somebody carries a piece of a nevela, he would become tomei. And since there wasn't a valid slaughtering which took place over here, it's as if the animal just died by itself and it has the status of a nevela. However, Rabbi Akiva says that since the beginning of the slaughtering was performed correctly, because the first pipe was cut through in a perfectly valid fashion. Therefore, it is not considered to be a nevela. That's an animal which dies without any correct slaughtering. This animal which died during the slaughtering, there was invalidation of the slaughtering, trefa. It has the status of a trefa, which is an animal which has some sort of internal wound, which makes it forbidden to eat the animal, even if you slaughter the animal correctly. So this, we look at this as if it was slaughtered correctly, but it's forbidden to eat. The difference between a nevela and a trefa, although they are both forbidden to eat, is that a nevela is a source of tumah, whereas a trefa is not a source of tumah, of impurity. Now Rabbi Yeshevov explained himself. Klal Amar Rabbi Yeshevov Mishum Rabbi Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshevov said the following rule. In the name of Rabbi Yeshua, Kol Shenif Slab Shechitasa, any animal which became invalidated during its slaughtering. So that slaughtering is not considered to be valid, and nevela, it's as if the animal just died by itself, and it's considered to be a nevela, which is a source of impurity. Kol Shechitasa Karo'oi. On the other hand, any case where the slaughtering in terms of itself is fully valid, the Dover Acher Goram Lolipasel, and something else external caused it to be invalidated. For example, the fact that the animal happens to have an additional wound internally, then trefa is considered to be a trefa, and it would not be a source of impurity. And indeed, once Rabbi Yeshevov explained this rule, the Hoidel Rabbi Akiva indeed agreed with him and retracted his position. Mishnah Hey, the law is that in order for a food to be able to become tomei, it must have at some point become wet, come into contact with one of seven liquids, water, wine, oil, milk, honey, blood, or dew. If a food has come in contact with any of those seven liquids, then even once it is dried, it is from that point onwards mukhshar lekabel tumah. That means that it is fit to become tomei. If a source of tumah touches the food item, it would become tomei. But if it has never before come in contact with one of these seven liquids, then it would not become tomei, even if it touches a source of tumah. Now, regarding the matter of tumah impurity, there are many different levels of tumah. For example, a regular source of tumah, for example, certain dead insects or small creatures, that is considered to be an av hatumah, which literally means a father tumah, that's a source of tumah. And something which touches an av hatumah becomes a rishon l'tumah, 1 degree removed from the original source of the tumah. And if that item touches a different item, then only if the other item is food can it become tomei. Objects cannot become anything further than a rishon l'tumah. However, food can become even a sheni l'tumah, 2 degrees removed from the original source of tumah. But if that touches a different food item, then the other food item would not become tomei, unless that food item has a certain level of holiness to it. For example, it's truma, it's the tithe which is given to a kohen, or it is meat of a korban. Then it can become even a shlishi l'tumah, 3 degrees removed from the source of tumah. And the meat of korbanos specifically can even become a revi'i l'tumah, 4 degrees removed from the original source of tumah. Be it as it may, midrabbanon, one's hands are considered to be a sheni l'tumah. They have the status of something which is 2 degrees removed from an original source of tumah. Since one's hands, often one doesn't take care to know exactly where they touch, one needs to be concerned that they are a sheni l'tumah, and for most types of food or items, that's irrelevant. Because if a sheni l'tumah touches a regular food item, that food item would not become impure. Only food which is holy can become tomei if it touches a sheni l'tumah. So with those two introductions, we can begin the Mishnah. If one slaughters a domestic animal like a sheep or a goat or a cow, chaya, a more wild animal, v'oif, or a bird, v'loyot mehem dam, and no blood left their bodies when they were slaughtered, kasherim, the animals are nevertheless fit to be eaten, and we do not need to be concerned that the animal was already dead before it was slaughtered. There are other explanations of what exactly the Mishnah is coming to teach us, but we're going to understand that it's coming to tell us that we do not need to be concerned that the animal was already dead. And in addition, v'ne'echolim yodayim servos, and it can be eaten with tomei hands. When I say tomei hands, I mean hands which midrabbanon need to be presumed that they have the status of a sheni l'tumah. Since over here no blood left the animal's body, so it never came in contact with a liquid. For meat, it would have had to come in contact with a liquid after the animal was killed. Only then does it have the status of food. Now, this food never came in contact with a liquid, and therefore it never became hukshar lekabel tumah, fit to become impure, such that once it is processed, as long as it doesn't come into contact with a liquid during the procedure of preparing it, one would be able to eat it with his hands, without purifying his hands beforehand. Now, the Mishnah implies that in a case where blood did come out, like a regular slaughtering, it would be forbidden for one to eat that meat without first purifying his hands. But that's difficult to understand, because we're talking over here about regular chulin meat. Meat which is not holy. Meat which is not holy doesn't become impure even if one's hands touch it. So the Gemara explains that we're discussing a person who is particular to eat all of his food, even his non-holy food, with the same degree of purity that he would eat korbanos. This was especially common amongst Kohanim, who would eat korbanos often, and in order not to be confused with different foods which do have the status of a korban or which don't, they would make sure that all of their food was eaten in a state which fit with the laws which were necessary for korban meat. And so the Mishnah is saying that in this case, where blood didn't come out, it would be permitted even for such a person to eat the meat without purifying his hands first, because the meat didn't become fit to become impure with any blood, because there was no blood. Rabbi Shimon says, even in this case where there was no blood, the meat becomes fit to become impure by the very fact that it was slaughtered. Since the slaughtering changes this animal's state of being an animal to being a food item, according to Rabbi Shimon, interestingly, that is enough within itself to make it fit to become tamei. Mishnah Vav, Shechit Zam Sukenes, one who slaughters an animal which is in danger of dying. If the animal is in danger of dying as a result of having an internal wound, then it has the status of a trefa and it is forbidden to eat it. But if it doesn't have any wound, just that it's on the verge of dying, then as long as we can be sure that it didn't die in the middle of the slaughtering, and not as a result of cutting both of the pipes, then it would be permitted to eat it. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, as long as the animal makes movement, and it jolts with both its hand and its feet, one meaning at least one of its front legs and one of its back legs, that is a sign that the animal is still alive. And that is what usually occurs when an animal is slaughtered. And if that happens over here, then it's clear that the animal didn't die in the middle of the slaughtering. Rabbi Eliezer says, Dayo im zinka, it is enough if the animal causes blood to burst out of the place where it is being slaughtered. That is a sign that the heart is still beating and that blood is being pumped around the body. Even though the animal doesn't move its legs, which is not common for a slaughtering. In general, the animal does move about. Nevertheless, one does not need to be concerned that it has died already. It's just lacking energy because it's on the verge of death. And as long as blood bursts out of that place where it is being slaughtered on the neck, that is a sufficient sign that the animal is still alive. And it is only being killed by the slaughtering itself. Rabbi Shimon added, even one who slaughters at night and he's not able to see whether the animal is moving about or whether blood bursts forth from the neck, ulamachar hishkim, and the next day he woke up and there was light, umotza kasolim aleim dam, and he found the walls of the neck of the animal full of blood. So in this case, kashera, the slaughtering is presumed to be valid, shazinka, because it can be assumed that all of this blood is as a result of the blood bursting out of the animal's neck during the slaughtering. And we don't need to be concerned that it's all happened right at the beginning of the slaughtering and not during the rest of the slaughtering. No, we can assume, since there is a lot of blood there, that the blood was bursting through for the entire process of the slaughtering. Achmidas Rabbi Eliezer, and this is assuming the opinion of Rabbi Eliezer, that the mere bursting of blood from the neck is enough to assume that the animal did not die other than as a result of the slaughtering. The Chachomim say a middle opinion, that we don't need the animal to move both, to jolt both of its front leg and its right leg and its back leg, which is what generally happens when an animal is slaughtered. Rather, agitifax obiodo borego, it's enough that it jolts with either its front leg or its back leg, not with both of them, that would be enough. Agitkashkesh biznova, or even if it just wiggles its tail, that is a sufficient sign that it is still alive. All of this applies, echel b'madako v'echel b'magasal, both to a smaller animal like a sheep or a goat, and a larger animal like a cow. However, behemo dakosh aposhto yodore hechazira, if a smaller animal just stretched out its front leg, it moved in one direction, it didn't jolt about, but it just moved in one direction and didn't come back again, it just stopped there. Pasula, the animal is considered to be invalid, she'eino ela hitzaas nefesh bulvad, because this is only a sign of death. This always happens when a small animal just dies. And therefore, it is seen that the animal died not as a result of the slaughtering. On the other hand, for a larger animal, this is not something which occurs for a larger animal, and therefore we assume it's a result of the slaughtering, and that would be permitted to eat. When is all of this said that we need to look for these signs that the animal is still alive? In a case where the animal was presumed to be on the verge of death, but if it was presumed to be a perfectly healthy animal and there was no sign that the animal was about to die, then even if there are none of these signs which we see at the time of the slaughtering, kasheirah is still valid, and there's absolutely no reason to assume that the animal died as a result of anything other than the slaughtering. Mishnah Zayin, Ashechet Lalochri, one who slaughters an animal on behalf of a non-Jew, the animal belongs to the non-Jew, Shechitase Kasheira, the slaughtering would be valid, and if the non-Jew decides to give you that meat afterwards, you'd be able to eat it. Rabbi Eliezer Paisel, however, Rabbi Eliezer invalidates the slaughtering out of the concern that the non-Jew had the intention that it be slaughtered for the sake of idolatry. In such a case, not only is it forbidden to eat the animal, but it's forbidden to have any benefit from the animal. It could be that one is not even able to charge money for that afterwards, since that would be benefiting from the sack, from something which was slaughtered for the sake of idolatry. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer added, "Afilu shechoto sheyochal anochi mechatz hakovid shelo." Even if the Jew slaughtered it for the sake of the non-Jew to be able to eat from its chatzar kovid, which is translated as the diaphragm, meaning even if the non-Jew only owns a small part of this animal, and the rest of it is owned by a Jew, even in that case, pasula, the slaughtering would be invalid, because the presumed intention of the non-Jew, unless otherwise stated, is that it be for the sake of idolatry. Rabbi Yossi presented the following argument to argue against Rabbi Eliezer. It's a matter of all the more so. In a case where one's intentions have a very large power of invalidating, and that is in the case of karbonos, as we learned in Maseches Vochim and also briefly in Maseches Menachos, if a kohen performs any of the four services involved in bringing a korban, slaughtering the animal, receiving the blood of the animal in a utensil, transporting that blood towards the Mizbeach, and throwing it onto the Mizbeach, if at any one of those four times the Kohen has an intention which invalidates the korban, for example, he intends to eat the meat of the korban beyond the time limit, that would indeed invalidate the korban. However, the law is that Eina kol hodech ela achar ha'oved. It all goes according to the intention of the kohen who is performing the services, not the person who is bringing the korban, the owner of the korban. No, it all depends on the intentions of the person who is performing the services. So mekom she'eina machshava peseles b'chulin, in a case where one's intention does not invalidate as much, and that is referring to a case where the meat is not holy meat, is not being bought as a korban, the law is that the intention for it to be for the sake of idolatry would only invalidate and prohibit the meat of the animal if there is intention for it to be for the sake of idolatry at the time of the slaughtering or at the time of the throwing of the blood of that animal for the sake of idolatry. But in the other two parts of the service, if one receives the blood or transports the blood, and at that time he has the intention for it to be for the sake of idolatry, that would not prohibit the animal. So we see that the prohibiting and invalidating power of one's intention in the case of a meat for the sake of idolatry, is less than that of the intentions in the case of a korban. And so all the more so, ein din is not all the more so, that should all only depend on the intentions of the one who is slaughtering it, and the intentions of the owner of the animal should be irrelevant, just like it is irrelevant when a korban is being brought.